You think of the difference between a customer and a shareholder? It's like the difference between enjoying a bowl of noodles and wanting to own a noodle shop.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
So I'm on a bus. It's a typical Sunday evening heading into Hong Kong from Shenzhen. Mid-Autumn Festival has just passed by, and this bus is just jam-packed with holiday travelers heading back from fun-filled weekend in mainland China. And we are at episode 141, globalfromasia.com/episode141. Do you guys use those show notes, right? Cheryl's my amazing assistant helping me out with those, and I know we spent a lot of time, so I hope you guys enjoy the show notes too. You can always check those out. So speaking about cross-border, we're going to do another cross-border business trip. People enjoyed that first one we did in Shanghai Free Trade Zone back in July, and now we're going to go the other way and into Hong Kong. We'll be talking about doing Chinese e-commerce via Hong Kong businesses. We're going to visit some fulfillment centers, Jingdong platform, and other e-commerce platforms, and have speeches and workshops like before. It's a full-day event, Friday, October 21st. If you want to check out the details, head on over to globalfromasia.com/HKTrip. Shout out to my wife, Wendy, and Cheryl Liu. They're both doing a great job planning that, and I'm excited to go. Okay, now for this week's show, we have Nathan Rose. He is an equity crowdfunding expert, and he's going to be giving us some tips on how we can raise money for our startups and our businesses. He gives insights on various places around the world where we can incorporate and different jurisdictions, things like that. And I'm happy to announce for him, he's launching his first book. I know how stressful that was when I did my first one. And when we recorded this a month or more than a month ago, he was just getting underway, or deep into it probably. And if you want to learn more about his book launch, I made a page for him at globalfromasia.com/Nathan. All right, let's go on to the show. All right, thank you everybody for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have with us Nathan Rose. Thanks for being here, Nathan.
It's great to be here, Michael.
Sure. So we got to meet when I was in my Europe trip and at the DC event in Barcelona. So it was really good to connect with you and catch up. And thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's excited to be here. I think the topic that we're going to cover today, equity crowdfunding, is something that people may not have heard so much about, but I think your listeners might be interested in what's coming and what's around the corner.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, our listeners here are pretty fun. We're like nerds and we like talking like, well, we talk China, Asia, and we also talk like, you know, banking and finance and corporate stuff. So I think it's a good fit for our show. So you mind giving us a quick high level introduction of yourself and what you're doing, Nathan?
For sure. So my name is Nathan Rose and I come from New Zealand originally. I now base myself in Europe and I'm the director of Assemble Advisory, which is a company I started about a year ago to help startups raise money through helping them convey their story through high quality pitch decks and providing them with some thinking for deciding on valuation to go out to investors with. There's a particular speciality we have in equity crowdfunding, but we also help startups if they're looking at private channels like venture capital as well.
Okay, very cool. And yeah, you've got some great content on your blog and we'll definitely link that up for those that want to dig in deep. So I'm always curious how people got started. So how did you get into the equity crowdfunding game?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting enough story. Like I was an investment banker before I set out on my own. And like many people in their mid to late 20s, I got the urge to travel and read the same books that a lot of people in the Dynamite Circle would be reading, like the 4-Hour Workweek and the idea of building a location independent business. So I was looking for a way really to offer the skills that I already had in some kind of capacity. And I think there's a misconception amongst people who start these digital nomad location independent businesses that you've got to be a programmer or you've got to be some kind of software guy. Well, I come from a corporate background, so I found a way to offer my skills to a new market which is out there and growing fast, equity crowdfunding. And I noticed that there are a lot of social media and marketing agencies out there providing services to these campaigns, but no one really from a financial background. So that's the gap that I spotted to provide financial-focused advice to equity crowdfunding campaigns.
Awesome. And so we haven't gotten into it yet, and you know, I know you're the expert. It can be very technical, but maybe before we go too deep, I think people think crowdfunding and they think, we'll mention it later in the show, but Kickstarter or these other platforms, maybe you can give people a different idea or another angle of what equity crowdfunding is?
For sure. So it's raising money through the internet, just like Kickstarter. And if you go to these pages, which are equity crowdfunding platforms, they'll look and they'll feel a lot like a Kickstarter campaign page. So they'll have a video explaining the idea. They'll have some amount of money that they're trying to raise, again, just like Kickstarter. But it's a mixture with that and with venture capital. So they'll be looking to raise amounts of money which are typically larger than Kickstarter. And in exchange, you don't get the T-shirt or the pre-ordered product or a donation campaign like you would on Kickstarter. Instead, you actually become a shareholder in the company. And what's different about it is that with the law changing in certain countries, you're able to have non-accredited investors be able to do that. What that means is that even if you don't have a high level of income or a high level of net worth, you're still able to invest in these companies, which are often pretty early stage. So it opens up a new audience for startups looking to raise money. They don't have to go to venture capitalists anymore. It's a new option open to them. It's also a new option open to investors because up until now, they were unable to invest in these startups, even if they wanted to, because the law just simply prohibited it. So I guess it's a liberalisation of the laws that's taken place, and it's growing pretty fast, particularly in where I'm from, in New Zealand and in Europe, and it's just starting to come through in North America and in Asia as well.
Very cool, very cool. So yeah, we'll dig in a little bit today, and it's such a vast subject. So you kind of answered it just now, but so yeah, you get shares, and there's these other platforms. So your service would help people to list on these other platforms, or would it?
Right. So the service that I can do, I mean, I can do a few things, but primarily I'm helping people to evaluate the different platforms that are out there and then approach those platforms with a business case that makes sense. It's not quite as centralized as the world of Kickstarter and Indiegogo, which are the big two rewards-based platforms. If you go to the UK, for example, there are dozens and dozens of crowdfunding platforms out there. So people need help deciding on which one's going to suit them best because they all have different areas of speciality. And yeah, they need some help with the approaching of the platforms too, because unlike a Kickstarter, there's only a small percentage of campaigns that would want to go live that can. They're a lot more picky about who they choose to go on their platform. So it's not just like Kickstarter where anybody can put up a page and see how they go. Equity crowdfunding, there's more of a level of curation that goes on.
Cool, cool. So the next one, another popular platform that probably is brought up a lot in your space is AngelList. So, you know, I'm definitely not the expert here, but, you know, when I was researching for our show, you know, there's syndicates, and that's kind of where angel investors and VCs have funds that allow, maybe I'm using the wrong word now, but accredited investors that can put their money behind these different power users or people syndicates to invest behind them. Is that equity crowdfunding, or what is that, or is that, how does that relate?
So the whole subject of what equity crowdfunding is and isn't is something that's debated within the industry. I mean, I think of equity crowdfunding as being something that's open to the general public, which AngelList isn't. It's only open to the accredited investors, as you talked about. It's going to be done through some kind of reduced disclosure versus a prospectus, because if you do a prospectus or the equivalent in whichever country you're in, you can go ahead and market to retail investors as well, the non-sophisticated ones. But those prospectuses are extremely time and cost expensive to put together. And that's really the difference, right? That if you wanted to raise money from the general public in the past, you would have had to spend tens of thousands of dollars to put one of these documents together with all the risk disclosures and all the deep legalistic due diligence that goes on. And for startups, they just simply can't afford that. So crowdfunding allows people to raise money from the public under reduced disclosure. I don't consider AngelList to be equity crowdfunding in the true sense, but again, there are some similarities. Like, they're raising money from investors over the internet.
Got it.
But there are some distinguishing factors too.
All right. So, I know we have mostly entrepreneurs listening, probably more than investors. So an entrepreneur, of course, is always thinking cash flow, and they need to keep their money in the bank for that next month's, month end. When should somebody start to kind of think about this? When's normal? Like, sometimes there's people that have, there's that keyword traction, right? Or MVPs, mm-hmm. and there's all these different kind of keywords we read on these articles online and we hear. It's kind of combine a couple of my questions, but maybe what's the thought process of should they do it, or maybe we can also follow up with when to do it?
For sure. I think the first question is to ask whether you should raise capital at all. So before exploring the different ways of doing that, you've got the fact that it's easier than ever to validate and grow a business with very little money. And there's books like The 7-Day Startup by Dan Norris that show ways to grow and scale a business without seeking investment. People hear the tales of Silicon Valley and how they raised massive rounds through venture capital and went on to take over the world. But take a step back and think about your lifestyle objectives. If you've gone into business because you enjoy having autonomy and independence, then having investors might be the worst thing for you, because it would remove some of the things that you enjoy most about it. I mean, financial investors are going to be very focused on growth, and maybe growth and working that level to grow and expand might not be that aligned with your objectives for the business. If they are, it can be a great way to achieve that, but look for that alignment between what investors want and what you want. And then once you've decided that raising capital really is something that you'd like to do, I'd go ahead and look at the different ways of doing it. So equity crowdfunding isn't the only one, of course. There's been a lot of different ways of raising money. There's loans, there's grants. Incubators can sometimes provide a bit of money, personal savings, venture capital, Kickstarter type crowdfunding. And you'd think about equity crowdfunding, I think, at the stage where you've already got traction, so you're past the idea phase, you've already got users and revenue and probably a large enough audience to market to. And the advantage of doing an equity crowdfunding campaign is to get the stakeholders that are around you really engaged with you and your business at a much deeper level, right? I mean, being a customer is one level, but if they're also an owner, they're going to have a much greater level of connection with you and your business.
All right. Yeah, I mean, this makes sense. And I love the idea of the audience too. I mean, that's something I have to admit I learned later in life that I will teach my kids sooner is, a lot of times people talk about the MVP, minimum viable product, but I've learned it on the internet, the minimum viable audience, or, having people that are aligned with your interests. And even if you don't have a product yet, you could start talk about your passion, like what you like to do and get people following that vision, and then they can hopefully even back later when you do make that product, they can support you. So I like that idea, and I hope more people do that rather than try to make a product.
Yeah, it's bringing people along for the
exactly.
It's bringing people along for the entire journey. So if they've helped you to decide what your offering is and helped you to decide who you should be reaching, then it can be quite natural that they want to take the next step, which is to join with you and to become a financial investor in your company as well, for some products, not all.
Definitely. So we're talking now, I want to bring up personal investors, or you know, basically versus compared to accredited investors. And I know that's something that's been talked about in the space. So it seems like you mentioned earlier, there are ways for non-accredited investors to get involved with equity crowdfunding. And the world's a very big place, but America is pretty strong. And I don't know, at least I haven't been updated. I thought that still wasn't yet approved, at least in the US. So I'm just curious, what's the state of this personal versus accredited investors?
Yeah. Okay. So in the US specifically, you had a change come through on May 16, which was to enable what they call Title III of the Jobs Act to be enabled. And that allows startups to raise up to $1 million in any 12-month period from non-accredited investors. If we look at some other places around the world, it's actually funny because, you know, the US is known as being the home of Silicon Valley and innovation, and all the tech startups are based out there. But when it comes to equity crowdfunding, Europe is much bigger, the UK especially. So they have a higher limit to what the companies can raise. It's 5 million euros for most of the member states of the European Union. And also the UK has got some pretty special tax breaks in place where investors can go ahead and put their cash into these startups and write that off against their tax liability, or write a percentage of it off against the tax liability that they'd be paying anyway. So if you earned £100,000 a year, let's say you had a tax liability of £30,000, and then you went and invested £30,000 into an equity crowdfunding campaign, you can reduce the amount of tax that you owe the government. And in some cases, that can be up to 75% of what you'd have to pay anyway. So you get a lot of upside and you limit your downside because, I mean, you'd just be paying the tax anyway, right? So it's a pretty good deal. In Asia, there's a lot of countries in Asia. So, I mean, going through them all is pretty difficult. But I would say it's at an earlier stage there than in Europe. And places like Hong Kong and Singapore tend to be quite traditional in their outlook for things like finance. I mean, they're very, very powerful traditional banking sector there. But there is some more activity in developing Asia, the likes of Malaysia, Thailand, and it's going to be kicking off soon in Australia too, we think, after the recent election there.
Cool. This is great. Wow. You just got a whole around the world overview, so this is great.
Yeah. Right. I think if you want to learn more about Asia specifically, there's a good website. It's cfasia.org. So that's the industry body for Asian crowdfunding. I think, and on that page, there'll be a lot about rewards crowdfunding too, as in the Kickstarter style, and peer-to-peer lending, which is another form of crowdfunding again, which we haven't even mentioned up until this point, but this Crowdfunding Asia site should be able to direct listeners who've got an interest in Asia to find some platforms where they can approach themselves if they've got a business they want to fund, or start investing if they want to tackle it from that angle.
Okay, cool. And when we were talking in Europe, you were mentioning to me like some people can do both. Like, it's not like you have to choose a platform or a model. You could do maybe a crowdfunding campaign, maybe Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and then later do a equity crowdfunding campaign. Is it? I'm not. Maybe I don't want to misquote you. If that's what you know, maybe if you think that's possible, or and then they would do that. Is there any strategies, or is it kind of still developing? Or
well, think of them as being two separate things that you do. So if you do a Kickstarter campaign, then that's a process, and you raise the money, and you've got to then deliver the product or service that you've promised if it's a business. But a lot of the time people find that all the money is taken up by filling the order and there's not a whole lot left in business development. So I know the Manal guys, right? They produced their travel backpack through a very successful Kickstarter campaign. And you know they've done very well because they've managed to retain full control of their company and fund the development of their business. But once they've gone ahead and delivered all those backpacks, maybe there's not that much left over for a new product development if they wanted to do that. So maybe there is. I actually don't know. But in general, you can raise more through equity crowdfunding than you can through a Kickstarter campaign. So you might do a Kickstarter campaign to prove that you've got a business and you've got actually demand for the product. And then the equity crowdfunding campaign can point to the success of that Kickstarter campaign as a way of showing that you've got a business that needs to be grown. It also probably does other things, right? When you think of the difference between a customer and a shareholder, it's like the difference between enjoying a bowl of noodles and wanting to own a noodle shop.
Got it.
You know, to buy a bowl of noodles just means you like the taste of them, but if you think about owning a shop, it means you're just asking really different questions. Do you think their margins are any good? Do they have the ability to expand? What's their location like? What are their competitors like? So you can end up with, you can end up with a different audience or a different level of engagement between Kickstarter and an equity crowdfunding campaign.
Okay. So yeah, you're mentioning asking questions. So how does the question asking happen? And maybe especially for smaller investors, you know, I know sometimes it might be annoying for the entrepreneur to get bombarded with questions from investors, you know, or especially, well, there's the before and there's the after, right? There's the honeymoon and then there's like, you know, wife and, you know, then there's like family, you know, kids and, you know, all that stuff. So the honeymoon's probably like the entrepreneurs are all excited and answering all these questions from investors and doing it, whatever it takes to reach their goal. But is there any issues where there's maybe a lot of small investors in a round and then do they have any say or are they just silent? Or I guess it probably his answer is depends, right? But is there any kind of insights or?
Well, think about why you do a crowdfunding campaign. If you're doing it to get engagement with your customers and other relationships, then being emailed and called is engagement. I mean, engagement's a two-way street. It's you engaging with them and it's them engaging with you. So I would say that it's not a totally invalid concern that you're going to have to spend some time talking to these people, but they should be helping you to grow your business. And if they're asking questions about how your product's going, they might have ideas about how it can do better, or maybe one of them is a lawyer and they can point you to some ways of doing that more on the cheap, or they might have connections to export markets if that's your thing. I think in general the founders that I've spoken to have said that the fear is overblown, and if you are proactive about keeping investors informed, then they'll feel informed and they won't have the need to ask so many questions. I'll give you an example. Oppo Ice Cream, they've done two large crowdfunding raises through Cedars, which is a UK equity crowdfunding platform, and they now have hundreds and hundreds of shareholders. And, yeah, they spend some time responding to emails every day.
Okay.
See that as a part of actually growing their business. Yeah.
Oh, so they integrate it.
Yeah, and you asked as well about what rights they have. The simplest rights that they'll have is they'll become ordinary shareholders. So they'll get to vote at shareholder meetings. They'll get a proportional share of dividends. They'll get a proportional share of the company if the company's sold. But you mentioned that it depends, and you can introduce additional complexity in there, such as give them non-voting shares or offer convertible notes instead of ordinary equity. And or you can offer through a nominee structure, which means that they all become a shareholder in a company, which is then a shareholder of your company. Some of these terms, you said that your listeners are into their corporate jargon. So hopefully that's not too advanced, but just know that there are extra layers that you can add on to it. So yeah, it's your round. You can set it up however you like.
Cool. Very, very interesting. Yeah, I mean, some people might think it's fun, or maybe they have a system. Like I liked how you said integrating it with their business model. So it's actually like a great source of feedback As long as the investors, like you said, want to own the noodle shop and they are your user, not thinking just as a business owner, but also as a user, it might be different sometimes. Very cool. So I think you kind of answered this, but since we do talk about Hong Kong quite a bit on Global from Asia, you said Hong Kong, Singapore, a lot of Asian kind of governments haven't really embraced it as much as Europe and the US. So that's pretty much the case. And then you also mentioned that link, which is great, cfasia.org. So then it seems like we got ways to wait if we want to do this with a Asia-based company.
I would say that's fair, yeah. And if you do want to do it, I would recommend looking at a report that was put out by Cambridge University. They call it the NESTA report, N-E-S-T-A, on the state of crowdfunding in Asian countries. That actually goes through each country one at a time to see what's the state of all the different forms of alternative finance are. Maybe after the show I can provide you with a link to that so that people can...
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, well, we can put on the notes for sure. Okay, cool.
Yep.
So moving on, you know, I can't really admit that I've raised a round. I mean, I've been through an accelerator and I had a couple of investment offers in China for a Chinese startup I did, but they were not... It was very, very horrible terms. Maybe they wanted me to change my management team and move some founders out of the company, and it was really horrible. So I ended up not taking that, and our startup merged with another company in China instead. So, but I did get some insights of feedback from some of these investors, and they didn't really like sometimes the cap table being complicated, which some listeners might not know is like the capitalization structure, kind of like the ownerships. So they would always ask me who's the owners, how many owners. And sometimes they would say it might be difficult because I had, you know, I was kind of in that startup. I had advisors and I had, you know, kind of like programmers with some shares and other kind of people. So I just wonder, maybe that's an Asia or China thing, or I don't know if I have been over here so long, I lose connection, but would maybe raising a fund around earlier and getting a whole bunch of these, you know, smaller investors complicate later rounds if you want to do, like, I don't want to sound like snobbish, but proper or traditional, Series A with like a Sequoia Capital or a kind of a bigger firm in maybe Silicon Valley, or would they kind of like feel like this makes it less attractive to them, or would this affect, do you think, raising in the future?
I think ultimately it's going to come down to the business model. If the business is good enough, VCs will deal with a complicated cap table. They're becoming more comfortable with this as well. Maybe it's just something that 5 years ago they never would have seen happening. But in particularly like the more developed markets in Europe, they're seeing it more and more. They know what to expect, and it's something that they can deal with. And the important thing is to set up your shareholding structure properly. And that can work in a couple of ways. So I mentioned the nominee structure before, which means that everyone's a shareholder in one entity. So if you eventually wanted to be bought out by a larger VC, if everything goes well, which is the outcome that the investors are actually looking for in a lot of cases, a nominee structure means that all of the small crowdfunded investors will vote for or against the acquisition as one. And you know, that means it's a lot cleaner for the VCs to ultimately take out. And another thing you can do is to make sure that you insert drag along and tag along provisions into the crowdfunded round. Again, this is something that people might not be familiar with, but essentially it means that if a majority or a set percentage of investors want to sell, it means that the other smaller investors are brought along for the ride. They can't just hold their minority position if the majority of people want to sell. I'll give another example. Mondo Bank, which is, again, an example from the UK, they raised £1 million through crowdfunding, and they actually had VCs investing in the same round. So all the guys through the crowdfunding raise got the exact same class of shares with the same rights attached to them as the VCs did. And they did this because they felt that by engaging their crowd, the business would become more valuable, and the VCs actually agreed with that. So, yeah, VCs will want to do whatever is going to increase the value of their own investment, and if bringing on a bunch of engaged and motivated brand advocates does that, I think you'll find people becoming more and more comfortable with it.
Yeah, it's true. It's just, yeah, especially in the financial world, you know, like banking and all this, they're usually the slowest to change, right? So they will have to get used to it if they want to get some of these newer deals.
It's a strange thing in a way, because they're funding new and innovative businesses, but in some cases they aren't totally comfortable with new and innovative ways of financing them. So I mean, I think it's not a completely baseless concern to say that VCs might be less comfortable. Some of them will be. But at the same time, there can be advantages to it as well. Like if you wanted to go down the initial public offering route, one requirement for doing an IPO is to have a broad shareholder spread. So it actually might make it easier to do a listing down the track if you've already got a couple of hundred shareholders on board. It means you fulfill one of those listing requirements.
All right.
Yeah.
This is great. Mm. All right, Nathan, we're kind of getting towards the end, and you know, I've been really getting a lot of value from this. I'm sure listeners are too. So maybe there's some investors listening with some cash on the side, burning a hole in their pocket, trying to get in on the next Facebook. You mentioned a couple of platforms briefly. I don't know if you want to throw out some places to go or your website. So you're helping investors, or you're helping more entrepreneurs, or both, or?
I'm helping the startups, and the reason for that is to advise investors in their portfolio. It requires you to be a financial advisor, registered in whichever country the advice is taking place in. And obviously with a global focus, that's pretty difficult to do. So I'm helping the startups.
Okay.
There is some information on the on my website for investors, just with some thoughts of a general nature. Don't come crying to me if it doesn't turn out to be Facebook, but so just insert that wee disclaimer.
All right.
If people want to find out about where they can go for putting some money to invest in, though, as usual, Google's a pretty good start. So search equity crowdfunding with your country afterwards, and follow the top few links, and you should find some good places to get started. I would say, though, to look for the most reputable platforms. So there's a bit of a land grab going on right at the moment where everybody's trying to become the platform of choice, right? In the same way that Facebook has dominated social media and Amazon has dominated online book purchases, people are also trying at the moment to suss out who is the leader of equity crowdfunding. I think there could be a different one in every country, or there could be two or three leaders. But look for the ones which have got the most happening in terms of deals, success rate, because as always, there'll be some platforms which are attracting the best companies, and because they're attracting the best companies, they attract more investors, which attracts more of the best companies, and there'll be some which are left with the lower quality companies. You don't want to put your money into those ones. You know, do your own research into that.
Got it. All right. And then, so that's all I have. And I really appreciate your time. So I really hope people can check out your blog and contact you or your business for more information. Do you mind just kind of plug in your website again for listeners and any other ways people can learn more about you and what you're doing?
Sure. So the project that I'm highly engaged on at the moment is writing a book on equity crowdfunding. So that'll be a great resource for any startups that are looking to do it. I'm interviewing campaigns that have done it before, and I'm interviewing the platforms and what they want to see. So you can find out more about that, and when it launches, be able to download it for free for the first few days. That's going to be available at assembleadvisory.com /book. We'll put the link to that in your show notes as well.
Yep.
And if they want some one-on-one assistance with looking at their options to raise the capital, they can go to assembleadvisory.com and fill in the contact form, and we can see how we can help.
Okay. All right, great. Taking all this notes right as we go, and we'll, as always, put the notes as clear as possible on this episode. And thank you so much, Nathan, for sharing.
It's a pleasure, Mike. Have a great day, and I hope your listeners enjoyed that. Cheers.
Thank you, Nathan, for coming on and sharing. That was some pretty valuable information. And this bus ride is getting pretty crazy with some hyperactive Chinese mobile app video game commercials blasting on the bus. I'm not sure if you can hear that or not. My mic is pretty good, so maybe you can't. But anyways, don't forget to support Nathan's book launch. I'm not getting any kickbacks or commissions on it, but he's a great guy, and I'm sure he needs all the help he can get with this launch. So definitely check it out at globalfromasia.com/Nathan to get to the latest part of the book page. And I am testing out live streaming on Facebook and even live radio. I'm seeing other podcasters and bloggers moving into this live phenomena. And I did a test walking around the streets of Hong Kong last week, and people were really kind of enjoying it. And I get more excuses to talk to random strangers on the street. It was actually kind of cool. I'm just like walking up to people saying, hey, this is Facebook Live. Say hi. And they're like waving. And then some of my friends on social media are chatting to them, and we're having conversations with random people through the internet while I'm walking around in Kowloon of Hong Kong. So life is totally insane right now. Anyway, stay tuned for more news and more things happening up. Got plenty of amazing interviews for this podcast for weeks to come. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I'm going to get back to my fun little bus ride. Cheers.
To get more info about running an international business, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.